What's up, world? Welcome to The Positive Truth, where we bring uplifting and positive news to a more progressive society. Today, we have an awesome interview because it's Friday. Obviously, you guys know on Mondays and Wednesdays, we do positive news, where you guys can check us out on our podcast. On Fridays, we do interviews with random people that are doing positive things in the community and positive things in the world. And today, we have an awesome interview, so let's jump right into it. How are you doing today?
Very good, thank you.
Awesome. So can you start off by telling us what your name is and a little bit about your background? Growing up as a child and how you got here in the United States.
Oh, how much time do we have? my name is Imad Inshasi, and I normally add a PhD next to that. Actually, I have two PhDs. My wife said having one PhD is really smart, having two is really dumb, you know, for the most part. The reason I said I have a PhD because my upcoming book, From a Refugee to a PhD, which pretty much sums my life story. I grew up in a refugee camp in Sabra and Shatila, S-A-B-R-A. If you Googled Sabra and Shatila, you would see that this is a place where a heinous massacre took place. I survived that massacre in 1983, September, and made a run to the borders. Not literally the borders. Those who survived the massacre, few of us were given a visa straight to come to the USA. My father is Palestinian. My great grandfather is Egyptian. So my mother is Syrian. If you're not confused enough, I married half native, half Mexican. My kids are very confused, to say the least, you know. My grandchildren are Cheyenne and Arapaho. My daughter, went to the University of Oklahoma, asked me one time, he said, Dad, what race are we? Are we African Americans? Well, Egypt is technically Africa, so yep. Are we white? Well, technically people who live in the Middle East are considered to be Caucasian. I don't know why, but technically we are. Are we Native American? Yep. Are we Hispanic? Yep. No, Dad really told me which race are we. I said, which one gives you the scholarship? That would be the one.
Exactly.
So I grew up in a refugee camp in Lebanon. My name is Imad Inshasi. Inshasi, the last name is reference to my family who came from Egypt. It's the name of a city in Egypt. Grew up in a refugee camp, went to all Catholic schools, charity Catholic schools, grew up on international welfare, UNICEF to be exact, went to UNICEF schools. And after the massacres that was perpetrated by those who claimed to be Christians, Christian extremists who killed 1,800 people in cold blood, made a run to the borders. Came to the United States at age of 17, started working like any other immigrants at Denny's and IHOPs and going to school at the same time. Start going to school, went to Texas Wesleyan College, Texas Tech University, Southern Nazarene University, University of Phoenix. So I earned undergraduate and graduate degrees while I was doing my my work in the restaurant industry, in the hospitality industry. Was involved with the mosque as a volunteer before the mosque was even here, before the Islamic Society was even here. And I was involved in interfaith work early on. Yeah. Having grown in refugee camp, fed by Catholics, my favorite story I always told to many people that there was this beautiful Catholic nun.
Okay.
I was 4 years old, so I had a crush on her, but don't quote me on that. I was 4 years old, that I loved so much. That she used to take care of me all the time. So that's why there was a lot of questions in my mind. Now, she never talked to me about Jesus. And apparently, she loved Jesus because she fed me, she took care of me. I grew up on Christian welfare. But those people who also massacred me also claimed to love Jesus at the same time. So while people were butchering people in the refugee camp, they were invoking Jesus' name and Mary's name. I was invoking the same names for safety, because Jesus and Mary are a big part of Islamic theology. For us, Mary is the First Lady of Heaven. For us, Jesus is the Messiah. For us, Jesus is coming back towards the end of time. We believe in his virgin birth. So there was a lot of confusion. But yet, it seems at that time, Muslims and Christians were hating each other. And, you know, to make a long story short, the Christian nun name was Miss Rahma. And when I came to the United States, you know, advanced in the restaurant industry, being a volunteer, start working a lot in interfaith work. You know, before you guys were born, there was something here in Oklahoma City, the Alfred Merritt Building bombing. People thought I was John Doe number one and John Doe number two, where, you know, John Doe number one was my friend, John Doe number two was me. And it was like, you know, before you know it, Timothy McVeigh was caught. And then I decided that I should do something. So we started interfaith work. And
what exactly is interfaith?
Interfaith is where people of different faith come together. We don't agree theologically, we'll probably never agree theologically, but we agree to stand on sacred grounds. And sacred grounds is feeding the poor, taking care of the hungry, standing with those, and giving those who are voiceless voice. This is what we call sacred grounds. I'm ventured to say that you and your father don't agree theologically, you and your mother, even people in the same church don't agree theologically. So not only that, this Muslim community was growing, and every single organization that I'm involved in have the word mercy. So I have Mercy School, Mercy Cemetery, Mercy Endowment Fund. Across the street, we have Mercy Food Pantry, we have Mercy Clinic, we have any social work bears the name of Mercy. Because that Christian nun, her name was Miss Rahma. Rahma in Arabic means mercy. So every organization we have here in Oklahoma City that is named after a Christian nun. Interfaith work is what we do.
Wow.
We just did everything now.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Nothing left.
No, we definitely got some more left. That was amazing in itself. I had no idea that was named after her. Mercy. So my next question to you for sure is, how did you become the Imam of the Islamic Society of Greater Oklahoma?
So to become an imam, how did I become the imam? I would say bad luck.
Really?
Well, it is not an appealing job, right? And it's not a job at all, it's a calling. And any preacher would tell you that, any rabbi would tell you that, you know, to think of an imam to be a job is just, you know, it's not an 8-to-5 Monday through Friday, minus the holidays. It's a 24/7 days a week, so to speak. So I was involved with the Islamic Society, as I said early on, as a volunteer, head of the executive committee, head of the social committees and other stuff. And then, you know, we had imams coming in and out. Some of them are foreign born. Some came from Mauritania, some are African Americans. And then, you know, the last, we have also somebody from Morocco. And then we have this amazing convert by the name of Suhaib Webb. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he's from Oklahoma City. He was the head of the Crips in Oklahoma City.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you know, he was in the hip hop industry, converted to Islam, memorized the entire Quran, went to Egypt and came back, and we made him the Imam, and then he became too big for Oklahoma, so he moved somewhere else. And we had nobody, so I was filling in the blanks, so there's nobody there. By default, I speak Arabic. I could, you know, read and prepare and give a sermon. People thought my sermons are very funny, so they said, well, you talk good, so can you be the imam? And in that moment, it was really profound, because I wanted to be an imam early on, but my father said no, because, you know, that's not a job that would give you a lot of money. Give you a heart attack, but it may give you a lot of money. And then I asked if I could go study from original sources. So I could have went to seminary here in the United States. Keep in mind, I already have a PhD in human resources now. So I could have studied from sources here in the United States, but I wanted to go back to the ancient books and to the original books and study in the original language, which is Arabic. So I agreed if they would send me overseas back and forth. For 10 years, I would go for about 5 months overseas and come back, serve here, back and forth, 1 month in the middle of the year and 4 months in the summer. And in those 4 or 5 months, I would catch up. I will bring all my studies here and study with somebody here, another doctor who is at the University of Oklahoma. So I earned a bachelor degree in Islamic studies, a master's degree in Islamic studies, and a PhD in Islamic Sharia law. And started preaching and became an imam. And by default, since I have served in all these committees and I was known in the community as, you know, I was in the food industry for a long time before I became a full-time imam, it all came together. I was acquainted with many politicians, many law enforcement people, some I like, some I like, you know, but for the most part, I became an imam in the community, and we have been growing the community. We're almost 20 years old.
Wow, really? Yeah. And you've been here all 20 years?
Even before 20 years, before even this was a mosque, when this was actually a bare land.
That's amazing. Yeah. That is amazing. So you left the restaurant industry to do this full time?
I left the restaurant industry to do this full time. And at the same time, the infrastructure, the community was going through a turmoil, Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, community itself went through a split. I don't know if you know that, but we're about 72 ethnicities here. 72.
That's a lot.
Now, the vast majority of our congregation, and that is also relevant to the entire United States of America, is the vast majority of Muslims in America are African Americans. So 30 to 33%. But also the other 70%,
right.
It's about 72 ethnicity.
It's 2/3.
I have people could speak every perceivable language in this mosque, plus their offsprings, plus a combination of interracial marriages and ethnical marriages, and a combination of everything. So if you look at the next generation, you're gonna say, oh, what race is this? You know, so to bring people together with this diverse background, considering local politics and considering overseas politics that also, you know, pours in our mosque. You know, something happened in Syria, the Syrian community here could be divided. Something happens in Iraq, the Iraqi community. So bringing people together was not an easy task.
Absolutely. I can definitely hear the struggles and see the struggles.
I used to be actually good looking, and I had black beard and I had a lot of hair, but I don't know, you know, just...
You still kept it together. You're looking pretty good. So we interviewed Adam Salatani, mm-hmm. You know, the executive director for CARE.
Sure.
We interviewed him a while back.
I know. My boy.
Your boy.
Yeah.
For sure. So we asked him about the general atmosphere of Islamophobia. I hope I said that correctly.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, how is it, what's your general feel for it as a religious leader?
Well, definitely, Islamophobia has always been here. If you want to trace Islamophobia, I could take you all the way to, you know, I'm a professor of Islamic studies. I could take you all the way back to the spread of Islam in the 7th century. Islam starts spreading throughout the Middle East, where, you know, the Byzantine Christian Empire was there. So nobody was about to compete with Christianity after it became the official religion of the empire. And when Christianity came, the religion of the Byzantine Empire, who's gonna compete with it? No one, except Islam. So Islam comes with similar theology. Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus is coming back. Heaven, hell, same eschatology, same end of time things. And Islam starts spreading. So that initial fear in the Middle East was eventually boiled over late 10th century, early 11th century with the Crusades, where the Europeans came into the Jerusalem to liberate it from the infidels. And the infidels were anybody, Muslim or Jewish, and even Christians who happened to be brown were butchered. So that sentiment started. And as Christianity, as the Christians came to Plymouth Rock and started establishing here comes another wave of forced immigration. We call it slavery. So many of the slaves, Dr. Sherman Jackson, who is a Muslim historian said 42% of American slaves were Muslim. So by 9th century, 10th century, the vast majority of Africa was Muslim, especially North and West Africa. And here again, another encounter, right, between the Muslim slaves and the white masters. And you would see, you know, Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, and all those people. So white supremacy created black supremacy. Malcolm X actually prescribed to that black supremacy, but then he went to pilgrimage and came back and said, whoa, you cannot combat white supremacy with black supremacy. You can only combat any supremacy by declaring that God is the supreme. So Islamophobia started. The Iran problems, the Palestinian problems, Palestinian-Israeli conflict, World Trade Center. So Islamophobia has always been there, but it's been really amplified to the power 1,000 during the last election. I could tell you statistically, probably Adam told you all the statistics, but it is perfectly fine now to bash Islam and Muslims. The highest office just 2 days ago in our nation, and we have a lot of respect to the office, right? We have a lot of respect to the office of the presidency. But the office of the presidency just tweeted three alt-white, crazy fake videos 2 days ago about Muslims perpetrating heinous acts, which was a really completely 100% fake. But the president retweeted that. You know what that means to us? That means to us kids cannot play outside today because somebody gonna say, oh, here's some Muslims, look, and look, so-and-so with the beard look like Islam, and people mix that word. Are you Islam? I said, yeah, I'm the whole thing. You know, it's like, yeah, I know I'm a Muslim, so I practice Islam. So Islamophobia has been a constant thing for us, and we dealt with it. We felt it, and just during the last election and during this last, hard to believe it's been only 1 year, it's been very tough. I just mentioned to you that I have African American in my family. I have Native Americans in my family. I have Hispanics in my family. I have immigrants in my family and Muslim in my family. So this whole thing was against me personally, in one fold. And another fold, as a Muslim leader, my faith has been called cancer. There has been laws, I can understand when hate comes from individuals. I mean, not understand it, but I can deal with it when it comes from individuals. But when it comes from government, the last time a government actually went ahead and instituted what we call government racism was Nazi Germany. It didn't go too well.
Yeah, absolutely right.
It did not go too well. You know what I'm saying? And this is a scary time for Muslims. Although I cannot tell you how many times I give a sermon, faith over fear. Number one, faith over fear. Number two, faith over fear. I think I'm like 337 episode trying to tell people that, you know, something good gonna come out of that. We don't know what it is. Maybe I'm seeing some of it, where many coalition, many minorities coming together and standing up for our country. But Islamophobia has been a mixture of, now it's accepted. So if the president of the United States is Islamophobic and spread fake news about Islam and Muslims, so it must be something perfectly fine to do. It's translated into common man as, you know, it's perfectly fine to bash Islam and Muslims and burn their worship places or commit hate crimes against them. So it's a scary time, but it's also rewarding time to stand up.
Absolutely rewarding time. I feel like even more now, especially now with our president saying everything he's saying, tweeting everything that he's tweeting and sharing everything, it's time for people that don't even believe in that faith stand up for their friends and their loved ones. And that's exactly how
that's what's happening. I mean, you have no idea how many times we get how much letters of support we get and chocolate and cupcakes, you know, and more than I could admit.
Time out. I'm sorry. Yeah. I apologize. I'm a big cupcake guy. You guys eat that is amazing. That's so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating because I think people feel embarrassed. And this is what we call in psychology collective guilt. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know, the president is doing that. I got to do something. So it created, you know, out of evil always comes good. It created a wave of support. You have no idea how many times we are here for Friday prayers and we're coming out. So there's about 1,000 people that come here to worship. And we're surrounded by interfaith people, Christian, Jews, Buddhist, and with big signs say, you're home, we're sorry, this is going, and you know, and people hugging each other. Or the day we were at the state capitol, man, we went to the state capitol to teach our kids about you know, their civic engagement. And some people thought we're desecrating the grounds and we shouldn't be there. So here's people standing with signs that use the F word and Jesus with the same sentence. And, you know, I've been escorted by rabbis this way. I will not, you know, we had the interfaith community have a wall of love while we could be escorted in. And I was welcomed by two rabbis. We have two female rabbis, you know, from the city, Rabbi Jacobson and Rabbi Verid. And, you know, Rabbi Jacobson was almost 9 months pregnant and it was sub-zero temperature and she was escorting me. I was going like, I could, you know, I'm a dude, I could take care of myself, you know what I'm saying? She said, no, we're Jewish. We know what, you know what hate feels like. We know what anti-Semitism feels like. So this intersectionality of, you know, hatred towards, you know, racism, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, homophobia, they all come together. The people who burn black churches are the same people who burn synagogues, are the same people, same mentality of burning mosques now. It's a sickness, and we stand up together against it.
That's so powerful. That's wonderful to hear. Ah, well, I have one more question.
Sure.
So, last year, I heard from your boy, you took a trip. And you went with some religious leaders from across the state, and you guys traveled to Israel and the Palestinian territories. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that trip and the outcome of it?
Sure. So part of interfaith, you grow. It's like any other relationship, right? So it's like any other marriage, any relationship, right? So relationship, you grow. Our interfaith work started right after the Alfred Murray Building bombing. A lot of people don't realize that Oklahoma leads the nation in interfaith work simply because we had the Alfred Murray Building bombing. We started interfaith work prior to the entire nation. Many cities in the United States of America started interfaith work after September 11th,
right.
2001. We started in 1995, Interfaith Alliance. Started in 1995. So we have grown. We learned to communicate with one another. We learned to talk with one another. We even make jokes. You know, you have certain, you know, reach a certain level.
Kind of level for sure.
When a rabbi and an imam and a preacher, you know, you know what I'm saying? But you know, you have a certain, you have reached a certain level when, you know, you sit down and you're laughing about certain silly things that happens everywhere.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying? So we decided to kick that a notch, and because there are many people live in Oklahoma, in particular Christians, that do not understand how complicated the Palestinian-Israeli issue is. So they say, oh, we can solve it. Well, it's more complicated than that.
We can solve it.
You know what I'm saying? So Averid Harris, which is a rabbi of Temple Bene Israel, and Adam Sultani, who actually sits on Religion United, said, how about if we make a trip to the Holy Land and take people, right? And we did. And we planned, all of us sat down and we planned a trip. It's not, what I want to call it, it's not a touristic trip. I'm going to call it unsanitized trip, right? So we did not go just to the church for the Sopplica where Jesus, you know, the holiest place for Christians, and to the mosque. We went to settlements.
Really?
We went to the walls. We sat down with Palestinians. Actually, that was probably one of the most profound part of the from the trip is we sat down with a Jew and a Palestinian who lost children in the same day. A Palestinian lost his daughter. She was 7 years old, shot by the police. Yeah, so, you know. And the Israeli lost his daughter in a suicide bomber. Same day. And his was really fascinating. They both called Amber. The Palestinians called Amber, his daughter's name, Ambar. And the Israeli daughter name's Amber. So both have the same name, both the same age. Both are the same grade. Both are live in different parts of the town. So somehow, the two fathers got together. And now, they're radically... they're actually been marked as radical because they're working towards peace, right? You know, we were sitting down and they were showing the picture of their daughters, and you could tell how much they love each other because they shared a pain. So the trip, we went together. We went to the Holocaust Museum, and as an American Muslim, I went to the Holocaust Museum. Of course, I am highly educated on what happened during the Holocaust, and I understand. I understand the impact it had on Jews and Judaism. But I saw myself navigating towards the speeches of Hitler, because his hate speech sounds exactly like the hate speech we have here in America. It's the Jews, it's those minority, it's those, you know, and it's really fascinating. We should have a registration forms for them. We should monitor the synagogues. So I just said, just take the word Jews and put the word Muslim, and take the word synagogue, put the word mosque, and it's the same speech. We went to the Dome of the Rock, where non-Muslims were not allowed to go in. And I decided, okay, so if non-Muslims are not allowed to go in, then nobody's going in. Some of the Muslims were mad with me, but that was courteous that, you know, it was really discriminatory in a way. As an American Muslims, we could not drop our American identity. And in the same day, we went to a market where the Muslims were not served. We were kicked out of the market. And with us is Carla Hinton, which is the editor of the Daily Oklahoman, writing stories, who happened to be African American. She looked at me like, wow, you know. So we were like looked at because of our exotic look. And we were not served. We were actually kicked out of the Jewish market. And here comes the Israelis and the Jewish Americans who were with us. I don't know what they were saying, but they were yelling back and forth. I know they were standing with us. So we stood for each other. We were looking for each other. We had those unsanitized conversations on the bus. We sat down with settlers. And, you know, and I never thought in my entire life I would sit down face to face with somebody who took my land. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. So, who gave you this land? God. Okay, so we're done. So, you know, of course, I couldn't say anything, but here comes the Israeli tour guide, who actually served in the Israeli army, yelling back and forth at the lady, like, what do you mean God gave you this land? You know what I'm saying? It has deeds. It belongs to other people. Here I go to my grandfather's house, because I told you I'm from Palestine, and then there are settlers from Brooklyn, New York, live in it. And a Jew with me who decided to, oh, wants to go with me, you know, wanted to fight with the person, you know, I said, oh, take it easy, I'm gonna be arrested, not you, you know what I mean? So for me to fly, you know, it's another layer or another level of interfaith work, right? To actually try to sympathize and empathize with the other. I've seen a lot of tears as I stood at my grandfather's mosque and my grandfather's house, and it's no longer mine, right, from the Jews. I've seen a lot of tears from the Muslims as some of the Jews were not allowed to go certain places and they have to take their religious identity, their hamaka out and stuff like that, so they will not be. Then I've seen discrimination, you know, because we have two female rabbis, and in certain sect of Judaism, females are not accepted. So here are some Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox male rabbis trying to diss some of the rabbis, and here all of us standing together. We came back, we made an interfaith communities. It was you know, we ate together, and we slept in the same hotels. We protected each other. We saw the wall. We saw the discrimination, and you see the rabbis weeping as some of the Palestinians talking about not getting water except once every 15 days. You move from a third world country to a first world country within 2 minutes. The Palestinians are in dire poverty, and the Israelis in third world, in the first world country in certain areas. There was a terrorist attack while we were there, and it was the funniest thing. Well, it wasn't funny, but the most odd thing is the rabbi was talking to her aunt who lives in Israel, and she would say, "Oh, I'm safe. I am in Palestine, so I'm on the other side. I'm with the Palestinians, so I'm safe." We walked into Palestinian refugee camps and saw the not the painting on the walls. What do you call that? The spray on the walls. What is that
spray
word?
Paint?
Yeah, spray paint on the walls, and you know, we compared that to South African apartheid. You know, it just the feeling was overwhelming. But we came back determined to stand up for our nation, to stand up against discrimination, to stand up against anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and our best allies are the interfaith community.
Wow, that was wonderful.
Thank you.
That's definitely beautiful. I have nothing else to ask you, to be honest with you, and I'm just like in awe of you right now as a human being, period. It's just the energy that you're bringing off and your stories. I feel like I can talk to you for another couple of hours. I definitely don't want to do that.
We're good. You know, I mean, we repel hate with love. This is what I preach here. You know, anytime somebody send us a hateful email, we always invite them for lunch. Really? You know, sometimes we have people would come here, militias with guns outside our mosque to demonstrate. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy.
Would you ever believe that somebody would come show up at your church with guns, and they're outside, and then, you know, we'll give them coffee and donuts, and one of the guys actually had a big mole on his face. I said, "Man, you gotta have this check. We have a free clinic right here. You wanna go and see?" So we went inside the clinic. "Can I take my gun?" "I can take your gun with you, man. I you know, I've seen bigger gun than that, you know." It happened to be cancerous, and he's being treated. So, you know, we feed the poor, we clothe the naked, we're socially active here, and we do so much social work in Oklahoma that when people call us cancer, I always look at them and said, "Well, the only Muslim associated with the word cancer are 8 Muslim doctors trying to find a cure for cancer." You know, when people tell us to go back home, you know, of course, my grandchildren are Cheyenne, we'll go to Watanga. You know, my daughter-in-law, one time somebody wanted to go back home, of course, she's Cheyenne. She's really mean. She said, "I am home, you go back home."
That's a good answer. I really love how you flip like every negative moment in your life into something positive, and that's super motivating for myself because I try to live my life like that now, especially. And I just want to thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you so much.
And, you know,
keep doing what you're doing. I really like the title of your show.
Thank you.
We need a lot of positive stories out there. You know, I appreciate what you're doing, we're very humbled by your visit.
Awesome.
If you like to look at the mosque, you're more than welcome to take you for a tour. If you want to shoot anything inside, oh, we don't say the word shoot here.
See what he did there. See what he did there.
Hey, that's the only thing we can do, man, is joke about things. You know,
I love the joking. That's definitely way more comfortable for me. Well, guys, if you guys are out there listening and you guys definitely like this interview, like, subscribe, share, and all that good stuff, leave a comment, 5-star review. And on that note, this is where JP says we out, and I'll say, stay positive.
Before you start there, I'm not responsible for 9/11, maybe 7/11.
Who saw this?